Welcome into Southeastern Carolines. It's week 11. We're getting down into the nitty-gritty of the football season, and it's getting to the point where every single game matters. Every single play matters. Because if you're in contention for the college football playoff, everything matters at this point. And I want to get into exactly what each SEC team, or at least each top 10 SEC team needs to do in order to pave their path into the playoffs. So we'll get into all of that. But it's a Saturday. It's Southeastern Carolina. So y'all know that I am live at 312 Pizza Company in Germantown. It's my absolute favorite place to come hang out and watch a game in Nashville. They've got thick crust pizza, which is delicious. They've got thin crust pizza. And if pizza's not your jam, don't worry about it because they've got other Chicago favorites as well. They've got local beers on tap. They've got a bunch of TVs. So, whatever game that you want to watch, wherever your allegiances may lie, 312 Pizza Company has you covered. And it is a big weekend here at 312 Pizza Company because tomorrow in their Germantown location, former Chicago Bear Terry Obie is back at 312 Pizza Company. So, come watch the Bears with a former Chicago Bear, Terry Obie, as they take on the Detroit Lions tomorrow at noon. Trust me, there is never a dull moment with Terry Obie when he comes to 312 Pizza Company. He can get back into his Chicago roots. I mean, he brings his love for football paired with his fun and outgoing personality. Do not miss it. If you're a Chicago fan, if you're a football fan, you're going to want to come hang out with Terry Obie, get his perspective on the game, get his perspective on being the Chicago Bear, and also enjoy pizza and drink specials while doing it. They've got drink specials, raffles, and prizes, and so much fun. So don't miss it tomorrow at 312 Pizza Company, Nashville's authentic Chicago pizzeria. Again, that is tomorrow at noon for the Bears Lions game. So let's get into it because at this point, we're talking about each week, starting week 10, we are talking about the college football playoff. And of course, these games still matter. The games that include teams that aren't in contention, a non-college football playoff team in contention against a non-college football contention team. Those games still matter. There's still bowl ramifications. There are still hot seats to be heated up for certain coaches. But there are four SEC teams in the college football playoff top 10. So, what are their paths to the college football playoff? I'll start with the most obvious. I will start with Georgia. Georgia will win out. Georgia is the number one team in the country. And Georgia, I believe, proved to us last week that they are the best team in the country, that they should be number one. That Tennessee's week-long stint as number one when Georgia was at three, Ohio State two, that was very short-lived because Georgia is just that good. And they'll win out and they will go to the SEC championship. I believe beating Tennessee last week punched their ticket to the SEC championship. I believe they will most likely take on LSU. And if LSU takes care of business at Arkansas today, and I believe Georgia will beat LSU. And I believe that even if they don't beat LSU or Ole Miss or whoever the West representative is in the SEC championship, Georgia will go to the playoff. They've got Mississippi State today. That's a game they should win. Kentucky next week. That is also a game they should win. And they finish up the season with Georgia Tech. And they will absolutely pummel Georgia Tech and just wipe their name through the mud. But like I said, Georgia proved on Saturday they're the best team in the country. They held Hendon Hooker to just 195 yards. The last time that Hendon Hooker threw for fewer than 200 yards was against Vanderbilt last year when he had 10 completions. So Hendon Hooker had about 10 completions for 150 something yards against Vanderbilt last year, but it really didn't matter because Tennessee still wiped the floor with Vanderbilt. Even when Hendon Hooker wasn't lighting up the scoreboard and wasn't lighting up for, 350 plus yards. But it wasn't for lack of trying on Saturday. He threw the ball over 20 times. In the four games in which Hendon Hooker has thrown 20 plus completions, all but one was for 300 plus yards. That one game was against Georgia on Saturday. And he threw an interception that was only his second on the year. That first interception came against Alabama, which is incredibly impressive. And Hendon Hooker's first interception came the third Saturday in October. But he threw an interception, and it wasn't a bad throw by Hendon Hooker. And it wasn't, you know, let's just get the ball out quick. And if we throw the, if we turn the ball over, then we turn the ball over. It was just a really good play by Georgia defensive back Kelee Ringo, because that's just how good Georgia's defense is. It's because Hendon Hooker never threw himself in an interception into an interception before, because the scheme just doesn't really allow for it. Because this Tennessee scheme can just get these receivers wide open, and a defensive back is left in the dust looking around like, what in the world just happened? But it was just a really good play by a really good defensive player in a really good defense. Georgia's defense held Tennessee to less than 100 yards rushing. And they didn't attempt to run the ball very much because Tennessee was down a majority of the game. So they had to throw themselves into that game. Held Hendon Hooker to less than 200 yards and Tennessee as a whole to less than 100 yards rushing. I mean, y'all, we talked so much about Georgia's defense last year. And a lot of the discussion in the offseason was, if Georgia's going to lose all of this talent to the NFL draft, how in the world can this defense still be that good? Well, it is. I think Georgia's been showing that us that all season long and really proved it with a statement win over Tennessee on Saturday. And I think that Georgia all season long has just been taking their foot off the gas. I made this point last week, and I have this inkling that all season long, you know, when Georgia went down early against Missouri, when Georgia gave up 22 points to Kent State, it wasn't because of lack of talent and it wasn't because of lack of ability. Honestly, I think it was because of lack of interest. I think it was because Kirby Smart wanted to say, hey, we don't have to go 100% here. Let's just do what we got to do to win games and we'll get by. Let's just do what we got to do in order to get our foot on the gas and to get up big enough, and then we can kind of ease off a little bit. Kirby, it seems like, has not been in the business of completely obliterating and blowing teams out, even though they've done that a good bit this season. They've had a very conservative approach. And I think that's where the critique of Georgia has come of, oh, you're going to barely beat Missouri. Oh, you're going to give up 22 points to Kent State. I have a feeling a little bit of that was kind of strategic. Or maybe it wasn't even strategic and it was just, we're just that much better than you and we're so uninterested in playing this game. Also, Stetson Bennett, we talk a lot about this Georgia defense, and this Georgia offense is not anything to laugh at. Playing Tennessee, Georgia was the second best offense in the country. Now Oregon has taken that spot after a big game last week, but Georgia is still the number three total offense in the country. Stetson Bennett threw for 257 yards, two touchdowns, zero interceptions, and Georgia as a team rushed for 130 yards. I mean, this Georgia offense, y'all, it's legit. And I thought when Georgia fumbled on the first possession that, okay, this is going to be a game. Okay, Tennessee's got them rattled. Okay, this environment is loud and both teams are going to be affected by it. But when Tennessee was held to just a field goal and Georgia scored on four of the next six possessions in the first half alone, I thought, oh man, Georgia is dangerous. When Tennessee's only touchdown was in garbage time in the fourth quarter, down 27-6, with like 4 minutes left to go in the game, to cut their deficit to 27-13, I thought, oh man, this team, this Tennessee team that's been able to score in nearly every possession, that's been able to score in like 30 seconds or less all season long, when they don't score their first touchdown until the last few minutes of the fourth quarter, I thought, oh man, I don't know who's going to be able to beat this Georgia team. So, what's Georgia's path to the playoff? I think they've already paved it. And I think that Georgia is going to win out. And I think that Georgia is going to be the top seed in the college football playoff because I think Georgia proved to us that Georgia is just that good. Tennessee lost last week to Georgia, but Tennessee very much so still has a clear path to the college football playoff. Now, Tennessee's hopes to get to Atlanta were crushed last week against Georgia when Georgia solidified their spot in the SEC East to compete for the SEC championship. But I believe Tennessee is going to win out. I think Tennessee had the perfect schedule because Tennessee, they got LSU early before LSU kind of turned things around. And now they have Missouri today and then Vanderbilt and South Carolina on the rest of their schedule. Those are all games Tennessee is going to win and they're going to win handily. So I believe Tennessee is going to finish their season with just one loss. And I believe that they have a strong enough resume to get into the college football playoff, even without an SEC championship appearance. So I believe if Tennessee wins out, they've got a really, really good case to get into the college football playoff. And at this point, Tennessee has more top 25 wins. And I say top 25, I mean college football playoff rankings. Tennessee has more top 25 wins than any other team in the country. LSU has two. I believe Georgia has two. Tennessee has three, with wins over Alabama, LSU, and Kentucky, who sits in that 23rd spot in the college football playoff ranking. So I think that is a strong enough resume booster. Now, here's the interesting one. Because I have been called Karenon by a certain afternoon radio host on this station for this quote unquote LSU conspiracy theory. Because I said that there is an argument for LSU to get into the college football playoff. Because I said that LSU has a path to get into the college football playoff. That is not a conspiracy theory. That is a legitimate argument. That is not something that me, LSU graduate and LSU fan, has just cooked up somewhere. That is a legitimate conversation that I'm having and all the way at the top is having. That Heather Dinich came out and said, if LSU runs the table and beats Georgia in the SEC championship, I don't know how you keep them out. That LSU has the best argument if LSU wins out and if LSU wins the SEC championship and beats Georgia and Atlanta, that LSU would have the best resume of any two-loss team in the history of the college football playoffs existence. If LSU wins out, beats Georgia in the SEC championship. So LSU would have beaten the number one team in the country and be the SEC champion. There is a case. I understand. I know. There's never been a two-loss team in the college football playoff. I hear you. But there's also never been an SEC champion that's been left out of it. I don't think there's ever been a two-loss SEC champion, but LSU would have a very strong resume. Beating, doing something that Tennessee wasn't able to do, beating Alabama and beating Georgia. LSU would have the strongest win in college football, a win over Georgia, a win over a team that dominated two of the best teams in college football just this year, Oregon at the beginning of the season and Tennessee this past week. There, I mean, the interesting thing about the college football playoff is the committee has no rules. The committee has no guidelines because you know who makes the committee's rules? The committee. There was never a group of five team in the college football playoff before last year. And I know Cincinnati did what they needed to do. Cincinnati was undefeated. Cincinnati went into Notre Dame and beat Notre Dame. And Cincinnati had a strong enough resume to carry themselves into the college football playoff. But my point here is just because nothing has happened in the past, just because it hasn't happened before doesn't mean that it won't. And I understand that with all the inconsistencies of the college football playoff, the one thing that has been consistent is a two-loss team has never gotten in. And your record is the most important thing. But I think there are so many other factors at hand. And it would be so difficult for the committee to overlook an LSU team that turned its season around, was able to beat Alabama and beat Georgia and win the SEC in Brian Kelly's first year. And I don't know if they look into that or not. I don't know what they prioritize. But to say that there's not an argument is a gross overlooking of just facts. And I think it's kind of an ignorant way to just look at records and say and dismiss a team that had done something really big. Now, do I think LSU is going to beat Georgia? Like, if I have to put money down today, probably not. So, there you go. LSU is a three-loss team. They're not getting in. But I can't predict the future. I don't have a crystal ball. If LSU does go to the SEC championship, there's at least a sliver of a possibility that they could win that game. And I just went on and on and on about how good I think Georgia is, and I stand by that. But I'm saying, don't tell me that there is no argument, and don't tell me that there is no path, because even though the path might not seem very clear, it's a path nonetheless, and it's a conversation that we have to have nonetheless. Now, there's a fourth SEC team that's in the top 10. And that team has no path, and that's Alabama. And how nice it is as being a team, a fan of a team rather, that has been beaten by Alabama, that has been kept out of Atlanta for so many years because of Nick Saban and because of Alabama, that I can say that they are not in contention. Feels pretty nice to hear. But what is the future of Alabama? If Alabama is eliminated from contention before Thanksgiving, what does that mean for Nick Saban's future? And what does that mean for Alabama's legacy? I want to get into that coming up next. Plus, your calls, your texts, your thoughts. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We are live at 312 Pizza Company in Germantown, my favorite place to hang out. Great food. Great beer, great people, great vibes, good football. Come hang out at 312 Pizza Company. I'm Caroline Fenton at Southeastern Carolines on 1025, 1063 The Game. Southeastern Carolines, 1025, 1063 The Game. I just highlighted the path to the college football playoff for the four teams that are in the college football playoff top 10 rankings. Georgia at number one, Tennessee at number five, LSU at seven, and Alabama hanging out there at nine. Georgia has the clearest path of them all. Tennessee, I believe, also has a very, very, very strong path. LSU, it's not as strong. It probably is a little bit more of a hoping and praying that LSU can win out, and hoping and praying that the committee values a conference champion over losses earlier in the season, but it's a path nonetheless. But the one team in the SEC that's got in the SEC in the ranked in the college football playoff top 10 that's gotten no path is the team that's been there more than the three that do. And that is Alabama. For the first time since 2010, which I believe was Nick Saban's fourth season in Alabama, for the first time since 2010, Alabama has lost two games before Thanksgiving. Just think about that. In the last 12 years, Alabama has been either flawless or only has one flaw on their schedule before they play Auburn. And that's a game that, traditionally, at least in the recent history, they've won. And they've slipped up a few times. You had the Cam Newton year, and then you have the kick six, of course. But for the most part, Alabama runs the table. For the most part, Alabama is dominant. But this year, in Nick Saban's tenure in Alabama, this year is a blemish. This year is an outlier. So it begs the question: is Nick Saban's dynasty, is Alabama's dynasty over? It's something that once LSU converted in that two-point conversion, and LSU fans stormed the field, and Nick Saban went back into his press conference and talked about how he needs to be better, how this coaching staff needs to be better, how they overall just need to be better, how they're just not good enough. Those conversations instantly started to happen. Even throughout this season, the conversation has been, well, this Alabama team doesn't look like the dominant Alabama teams that we know. This Alabama team that's committing 100 yards of penalties a game. This Alabama team that barely squeaks by Texas earlier on in the season, where it takes an immaculate drive illustrated by Bryce Young for Alabama to find the end zone and beat Texas. That's, hey, this Alabama team doesn't look like an Alabama team that we know of. This doesn't look like a dominant Alabama team that we're used to. Those have been happening all season long. But for the most part, Alabama was finding a way to win games. But now they're eliminated from playoff contention. So is Alabama's dynasty over? I think that anybody that asked that question, it's a fair question to ask. I just can't get there. I can't look at Nick Saban's body of work throughout his 16 seasons at Alabama and say that one year is going to eliminate or erase all that that team has done and all that Nick Saban has done with that team. Just look at the history. Nick Saban has been at Alabama since 2007. He has an 185 and 27 record. Think about that. Think about how nearly perfect that is. 185 wins to 27 losses, including his first couple of seasons at Alabama when they were going, 6-6 and 7-5 before they started to figure things out in the 2010s. Nick Saban has won the SEC West 9 times in the 16 seasons that he has been head coach, over half of the time. He's won the SEC West. He's won the SEC 8 of those 9 times. Nick Saban has 6 national titles at Alabama. 2009, 2011, 2012, 2015, 2017, and 2020. And in some of those gaps, Alabama still went to the national championship. They won 2015, 2017, and 2020. Well, in 2016 and 2018, Alabama got to the national championship and lost those games to Clemson. Now, Clemson won titles in 2016 and 2018. I don't call those years where Clemson was pretty dominant. I don't call those years a dynasty. We've never said that Dabo has a dynasty at Clemson because I believe that you have to win at least 3 titles in 5 years to be considered a dynasty. And I think the more and more you win, the stronger and stronger your dynasty becomes. So it wasn't just some sort of fluke for Nick Saban at Alabama. This has been something that's been running since 2009. It's been going on for like 15 years. I don't think that a dynasty like that is broken in just one season. I mean, you could say, well, it's 2022. Alabama hasn't won a title since 2020. They've won 2 in the last 5 years. You could look at it and say, well, Alabama's kind of starting to trail off. They went to the national title last year. They just got beat by a really good Georgia team. They won the SEC West last year. I think that if you, as long as you're contending, and as long as you are in the conversation, which Alabama was last year, which Nick Saban called a quote unquote rebuilding year, and they still competed for a national title. 1 year of a 2-loss season, 1 year of going 10-2. I'm just gonna, assume that Alabama is going to win out from here. Maybe that's a too big of an assumption considering what they have on their plate today against Ole Miss. I believe Alabama wins today. I believe that Alabama beats Auburn later on in the season. I believe Alabama will go on to go 10-2. For any other team in America, that's good enough. For any other team in America or any other coach in America, you wouldn't look at that and say, oh, well, that coach is losing it. I just don't think it's fair. And this is coming from somebody who despises Nick Saban. And despises what Nick Saban in Alabama has done to my team for the past 15 years. But I still don't think it's fair to look at what Alabama is this year and to look at what Alabama has been over the last 15 years and say that this year erases all of it. So, to the question that's kind of been floating around college football spaces of is the Nick Saban dynasty over? I think that's incredibly short-sighted because a dynasty isn't built in 1 year. A dynasty is built up, I think, over 5 and only gets stronger from there. So I don't think that a dynasty can be erased in 1 year because Alabama went on a 3-year streak of not going to a national title and obviously not winning a national title. But then they came back and ran the table. And the dynasty was restored. Now, I don't know if Alabama is going to come back next year and run the table and be dominant and go back to the Alabama of the past. And I don't know if Alabama's going to come back next year and struggle and have the same kind of woes that they've been experiencing this year. And then we can have a stronger argument of if the Nick Saban dynasty is over. But let's not jump to conclusions. And let's not jump to what everybody who isn't a fan of Alabama wants to happen and say, oh, Nick Saban's losing it. Nick Saban ain't got it anymore. I'm sure if you're a Tennessee fan or an LSU fan like me, a Georgia fan, an Auburn fan, really just an SEC fan in general, you want Nick Saban to be washed. You want his best years to be behind him. I get it. But let's be realistic here. Dynasties aren't built in a year, and they're not broken in a year either. I think the conversation that we really should have, and the conversation that I believe has more support to it, is, has Nick Saban lost it, or has the rest of college football just caught up with Alabama? Has the rest of college football just caught up with Nick Saban? I think that's what I want to get lean into a little bit more. Because this has happened in the past where Nick Saban may defy a trend that's going on in college football. He may speak out against it. He may get really frustrated with it, and he may be really opposed to it. But then again, Nick Saban adapts. So he might fall back a little bit. He adapts. And then he does it better than every other team. I go back to, up-tempo offenses in, the early to mid-2010s, where Nick Saban hated up-tempo offenses. He wanted to play the rough and tumble vintage type of football, hard-nosed defense, big fat linemen and running the ball, conservatively passing, running the ball, fat linemen, good defense. That was Alabama ball for the longest time. And then we started to see this up-tempo, high-powered, pass-heavy offense start to come to fruition in the NFL. And he hated it. He didn't like that because that's not Alabama ball. And then you saw Alabama adjust. Then you saw Alabama start to have more physical linemen that could rush the quarterback. You started to have more physical offensive linemen that could keep up with up-tempo offenses. You started to see Alabama throw the ball a lot more. I don't think it's a coincidence that the Greg McElroys and the AJ McCarrons just couldn't make it in the NFL. But the Jalen Hurts and the Tua Tagovailoas and the Mac Jones all are starting quarterbacks in the NFL because Alabama's offense evolved. Because Nick Saban embraced the change and evolved. I think what we're experiencing now is kind of the modern version of that. Nick Saban defied NIL. Nick Saban came out and actively spoke against it. He came out, and that's where all this Jimbo and Nick Saban hate came from. Let's not forget that. But Nick Saban spoke out against Jimbo Fisher in Texas A&M for paying for players. Saying, this is not what college football is about. And I understand Nick Saban's sentiment because this is new, because he's been around college football for a long, long, long time. And this is a massive change that makes his job so much more difficult. But Nick Saban will adapt. Nick Saban will welcome NIL. Nick Saban always adapts. And that's what makes him so good and so dangerous. Is that when there are changes happening in college football, he'll adapt and he'll just do it better than you. So I think that this year is a blip in the matrix, so to speak. That when you look at Nick Saban's history at Alabama, 09, 11, 12, 15, 17, 20, he's not winning national titles every single year. He doesn't have flawless seasons every single year. But they always come back. They always come back into the conversation. And what's one thing that you can never do with Nick Saban? You can never count him out. So, I mean, this tastes like vinegar, honestly, coming out of my mouth. Talking, giving Alabama and Nick Saban all of this praise. But, like, let's be for real, everybody. The Nick Saban dynasty is not over until we see consecutive years. Year over year over year. I would say, 3 to 5 years if Alabama's consistently getting beat and consistently not in the conversation, then we can talk about it. When Alabama consistently does not have top 10 recruiting classes and some of the best talent in the country, we can start having some of those conversations. But I think Nick Saban's going to make some changes. I don't think that Bill O'Brien will be at Alabama very long. Nick Saban makes those changes, and Alabama will be right back in the conversation next year. And if they're not, then hey, maybe there's a new dynasty in town. But coming up next, I'll get into some of my picks of the week, my games of the week, plus your thoughts, 615-737-1025 is our phone number. I'm Caroline Fenton. It's Southeastern Carolines 1025-1063 the game. Southeastern Carolines 1025-1063 the game. We've got a pretty fun SEC slate. And I think after last week was the biggest week of college football, hands down. I mean, we had the game of the year, Tennessee, Georgia. We had LSU knocking Alabama out of playoff contention. So we got a lot of our answers last week of who will represent the East, who was the top team in the country, who's the best team in the SEC, Georgia winning that game over Tennessee. We got our answer there. Now, we still have a question about who will run the West. Right now, LSU sits in the driver's seat after beating Alabama. They have a win over Ole Miss and a win over Alabama. They have yet to lose a game in the SEC West. So now LSU controls their own dynasty. But Ole Miss could make a massive statement today. They play Alabama in Oxford. I'll get into a breakdown of that game and exactly my thoughts on that. But I want to break down the games of the week. Can LSU solidify their spot in the SEC championship today? They're on the road at Fayetteville, taking on Arkansas, a team that was kind of the media darling going into this season. You know, Arkansas didn't have a super sexy record last year. I believe they finished the season either 7-6, 7-5, something like that. So they didn't have a super sexy record last year, but at least Arkansas gave us reason to believe that Arkansas was no longer going to be the laughingstock of the SEC West. Arkansas was like the Vanderbilt of the SEC West, that you could look at that game on your schedule and circle it and say, yup, dub. But Arkansas is not like that anymore. But Arkansas this year, they've struggled. They didn't end up being, the darling that a lot of SEC or college football media expected them to be. But the kicker here is, this a trap game for LSU? I think it very well could be. LSU's favored by 3.5. And after coming off of a win over Alabama, don't you think that spread is a little bit indicative that Vegas isn't very confident in what LSU can do? But I have a couple questions about this matchup. First and foremost, if this is a trap game, will be defined by how much Brian Kelly can get this team back up and ready for a huge win. So that's my first question is, we have a very tiny sample size of Brian Kelly at LSU. So my first question is, can Brian Kelly get this team prepared? Can Brian Kelly celebrate and be excited about a huge win over Alabama, storming the field? Brian Kelly first win over Alabama in his first try in his first year at LSU. Can he get this team turned around and mentally prepared to take on an Arkansas team on the road? That's not a bad team by any means, but it doesn't have the same allure as taking on Alabama. Because you can make the argument that LSU had a huge win over Ole Miss. They went on a 42-3 run. Ole Miss was undefeated going into that game. Ole Miss was a top 10 team going into that game, and LSU whooped them. Fans stormed the field. There was so much love for LSU after that game. Then he got that team turned around after the bye week and ready to take on Alabama. But how do you not get ready to take on Alabama? How do you not win a huge game over Ole Miss and you're playing for everything and not get hyped up and ready and focused to play Alabama? It's much more difficult to get ready to play Arkansas, get hyped up to play Arkansas. So that's my first question. Can Brian Kelly get this team back up and prepared after a huge win? Because we'll find out today. We will get our answer today. That's one question that I think can define this game. My second question is KJ Jefferson healthy? He's been dealing with a nagging shoulder injury pretty much for a majority of the season. And he wasn't 100% last week. Coming off of a last week against Liberty. And I mean, Arkansas is coming off of a loss to Liberty. LSU is coming off of a win against Alabama. I mean, these programs are in very different places. But Sam Pittman spoke with the media on Wednesday, said KJ threw some on Monday, not much at all yesterday. I don't know exactly what he'll do today. It's a fluid situation. And this is the important part to me. He said, I'll say this, Malik Hornsby, their backup quarterback, has had a really good week of practice. The team is confident in him. I think that's what's telling there. I think that's the kicker there. It sounds like to me Malik Hornsby is going to play. Now, KJ Jefferson, while he's questionable now, you know, he could turn things around and he could be the starter against LSU today, but it doesn't sound like KJ Jefferson is healthy. So if KJ Jefferson isn't 100%, I think that's advantage to LSU. If Malik Hornsby plays, I think that that is an advantage also to LSU. Malik Hornsby has started one game this season when KJ Jefferson just was not good to go against Mississippi State. He went 8 of 17 for 234 passing yards, which let me just say this. 8 completions for 234 yards is pretty impressive. I mean, he can throw the ball for sure. One touchdown, two interceptions, 8 rush attempts on 144 yards. So kid can run, absolutely. But there is some quote unquote football responsibility that I just don't see coming into fruition here. Malik Hornsby can throw the ball. Malik Hornsby's got great legs, but he doesn't take care of the football. And this LSU defense is really good. We saw that last week against Alabama, that between Harold Perkins and Ali Gay and B.J. Ojulari and the rest of their pass rushers, they can spook the quarterback now. They did it to Bryce Young, and they're going to be able to do it to either KJ Jefferson or Malik Hornsby, whichever guy is under center. So, advantage LSU based on Arkansas's quarterback situation. My second question is, what is Arkansas's defense? This is a strange dichotomy that I see with Arkansas's defense. Let's look at their pass rush. Second best in the SEC, 28 sacks on the season, second only to Alabama with 29. Okay, so great up front, great getting to the quarterback. Okay. But they're ranked 117th in total defense in college football because their pass defense is pretty darn atrocious. They're giving up over 6 yards per play, giving up almost 450 yards per game. So while Arkansas is really solid up front, the secondary is a pretty big issue. This is also a pretty interesting element here because Arkansas lost their two of the best members of their defensive backfields in the transfer portal, and Greg Brooks and Joe Fouché. Where do those two players play now? Those players play at LSU. So a little bit of a revenge game here, maybe. But yeah, Arkansas's defense, the secondary, poor, up front, really great. So how is LSU going to be able to respond to that? That's what we're going to see today. And I think this team has a, both of these teams have a lot of similarities. Both have really solid pass rushes. Both have very mobile quarterbacks. Jaden Daniels, I think, is one of the most talented quarterbacks in the country with his legs. And then either KJ Jefferson or Malik Hornsby, both of those quarterbacks are really good with their legs as well. And both of these teams have gotten into slow starts. But overall, I don't think Vegas is giving LSU enough credit. I understand that this game is on the road and that can pose some unique challenges for teams, but LSU's also been able to get wins in pretty rowdy environments. You look at Jordan-Hare at night, you look at the Swamp at night just a few weeks ago. I think that this LSU team is really tough, and that's one thing that travels. So I'm going to take LSU -3.5. Maybe it's a lot closer than I'm at least anticipating. Maybe it's a lot closer than you would expect a team that just beat Alabama against a team that just lost to Liberty. But I do think that overall, Brian Kelly's been here before. Brian Kelly's been able to get teams up and ready for games before in the past. He's a good coach. So I'm going to take LSU to cover the 3.5 against Arkansas. But coming up next, I'll get into the rest of my picks of the week, plus the big one thing that I think, the one that I think is the most interesting of the day. We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline Fenton, Southeastern Carolines, 1025, 1063, the game. Southeastern Carolines. I'm Caroline Fenton. Let's get into it. The rest of my picks of the day. So I want to save the big one, the juicy one for last. So you're just going to have to hold on to your seat for it. But Missouri and Tennessee also kick off today. And I think that both of these teams are playing for something. Tennessee is playing for a bid to the CFP. Tennessee wins out. I think they have one of the strongest resumes for a one-loss team. Maybe Tennessee or Oregon are competing for the strongest resume for a one-loss team in college football. On the other hand, Missouri is playing for bowl eligibility. So these teams are not the same. Tennessee's coming off of a loss to number one Georgia, Missouri is coming off of a loss to Kentucky. I mean, Tennessee's angry after a loss on the road at Georgia. I kind of think Tennessee felt like they got a little embarrassed. And I also think that Tennessee might feel like they're also getting a little bit disrespected because Georgia's a really good team. So I think that Tennessee is going to come out and really want to prove a point and say, hey, we belong in the CFP. And if you look at these two offenses, Tennessee is the best in college football. Missouri, on the other hand, is one of the worst in college football. They're averaging 23 points a game, 350 yards a game. Brady Cook on the season has 6 touchdowns. So not great. Excuse me, not yeah, 6 touchdowns and 7 interceptions, I believe. Yes. And these two defenses, I mean, look at the defenses as opposed to the offenses. Tennessee has one of the worst pass defenses in the SEC and 127th nationally. On the other hand, Missouri is ranked 14th in the country, just one spot up behind Alabama. But I think, even if this Missouri defense slows Tennessee down a little bit, I don't think Missouri can score enough points to keep up. So even though the spread is pretty large, 20 and a half, I think Tennessee is going to be able to win this game with 3 touchdowns. This is the big one. This is the most interesting game of the week, in my opinion. Alabama on the road at Ole Miss. Lane Kiffin, the biggest Nick Saban fan, well, actually maybe the second biggest Nick Saban fan in America behind Jarrett Stillman. So the second biggest Nick Saban fan in America, Lane Kiffin, taking on his old boss, Nick Saban. And Ole Miss wins this game. And Tennessee, excuse me, LSU and Ole Miss have a really interesting competition going on for who is going to win the SEC West. If LSU wins today, LSU wins the West. If Ole Miss wins today, it makes and LSU loses, makes things very, very interesting. And a couple of things that I want to look for is the run game on both sides because Alabama's going to want to run the ball. Ole Miss is going to want to run the ball. I mean, Ole Miss ranks third nationally with almost 270 rushing yards a game. 270 rushing yards. That is absolutely insane. Quinshon Judkins is better probably than any other running back in the country, and he is a freshman. But LSU, Arkansas, and Tennessee are the only teams who averaged more than 3 yards per play this season against Alabama. I think Ole Miss is able to match that and maybe get past that. But Alabama has a pretty solid run game themselves. Jahmyr Gibbs is an aspect of this offense that personally I don't think gets enough love. It's the Bryce Young show, but Jahmyr Gibbs and Will Anderson and Bryce Young, I think, are the trio that carried this Alabama team. And Ole Miss doesn't have a great run defense. They're 78th in the country. Alabama's going to want to run the ball. One, because they're expecting Bryce Young to throw the ball over the yard. Two, because Alabama's going to want to eat up some of that clock by running the ball. You want your defense to get some rest after keeping up with Ole Miss's up-tempo offense all day long. So expect both teams to run the heck out of the ball. And two other elements here. Alabama on the road this season hasn't been great. They've been undisciplined on the road. But also, I don't want to be the one that plays Alabama after a loss. I don't want to be the one to play Alabama after they just got embarrassed. So I'm going to take Ole Miss plus 11 and a half because I do think that this game being on the road gives Ole Miss the advantage. But I think Alabama overall is just going to be angry in this game. And I think they're going to win this game by about a touchdown, maybe 10 points. But I think Ole Miss is at least able to keep it close. That's going to do it for me today. Thank you for making Southeastern Carolines your. But that's going to do it for me today. Thank you to 312 Pizza Company for hosting me every Saturday morning. They truly are the best. Come out to 312 Pizza Company tomorrow. They're going to have a big event for the Bears game. Former Bear player Terry Obie will be at 312 Pizza Company. He'll be out to watch the game with y'all, whether you're a Bears fan or not. It's just a great place to hang out and a great event. So I will see y'all on Sunday at 312 Pizza Company, and I will see y'all next week.